Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Ron Wotus. And our bench coaches here of the San Francisco Giants, Sunday. Only got this one and one more weekend for you, and then it's the off season.
Hard to believe it's near the end, huh? It goes by fast. As, you know, as long as the season is, it's this time of year rolls around, and here we are, just two Sundays left.
You know, it's funny. On the show last night, I don't know if you heard any of it going home. You probably listened to country music instead.
Well.
But or Tim Flannery's CDs, probably.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what you're doing. So I asked the question. I said, you know, when 2009 ended, and I know you guys have evaluation meetings, and you say what went right, what went wrong, and it's the way we do it in every business. When I tried cases, I would do it and say, what went wrong? Why did this happen? And who could have thought in the next 4 years, and I said this last night, how blessed we are, two no-hitters, a perfect game, 26 up, 26 down for Petit the other night, and to top it off, how about two World Series?
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, let's look forward a little bit from this season, and, you know, we can evaluate a little bit what went right, what went wrong. What's on the horizon? What does this ball club have to do next year to get back into that mode? Maybe I said last night, I said, all right, I'll make a prediction. Bumgarner throws a no-hitter.
Uh-huh.
Over the next 2 years, this is the next guy to throw a no-hitter. But what do you think of a question like that?
Well, you know, first of all, going back to what you had just mentioned, you know, the baseball that we've seen here at this ballpark has been pretty special. What comes to mind... Again, I thought about the same thing when Petit was throwing another perfect game. I mean, these things just don't come around very often. And here he was, you know, you can't get any closer than that. A heck of a job. And it just came out of nowhere. You know, if you were going to say, is he going to throw a perfect game? Then you say, there's no way. But that's what's great about this game. It you know, it always surprises you. And there's always something new that you see out there. You know, predictions. Well, look, we got to get back to being a better team. That's you know, that's first and foremost, and there'll be a lot of decisions to make. We'll evaluate this thing, and Sabes and the front office will do their due diligence and do their work this winter to make sure that we're in good shape going into next year.
Yeah, I mean, as sort of a prediction, you'd say, well, maybe Sandoval 40 home runs. I mean, you know, give me one that's out there, you know. Kane, Pence is back and hits 35, or, you know, something that could happen here.
Yeah, it's probably a little more difficult for me. I look at things a little bit differently, probably, but, you know, your prediction of Bumgarner throwing a no-hitter, that's definitely in the realm of possibilities. He has that kind of stuff, and, you know, I could see that coming to fruition. How about, you know, Brandon Crawford will compete for a gold glove. He'll be at the top and have a chance to win a gold glove. I'll go with that.
All right. No, that's not bad. I like Hector Sanchez as well. I don't know how you feel about it, but, you know, when he gets behind the plate, now, I don't think too much about it. Hector Sanchez is catching, and we'll talk about some of his defense, but that's another guy that, to me, he looks better.
Well, he is. He's, you know, getting a chance to play. And look, the most difficult thing to do is to play off the bench, you know, play sparingly. And, you know, he's getting a chance to play some games in a row, and you get in a rhythm. And the other side of that is he is a young player. He hasn't had an opportunity to play a lot of games here at the major league level. And, you know, the talent is there, and you like to think guys will get better and keep progressing. That's it. It's a game of adjustments, and you need to keep getting better. And he's getting an opportunity to play, so hopefully he'll continue to play well.
Yeah, I like what he's doing right now. As I say, I don't even think about it now.
Right.
And look, he caught the Petit game. You know, and that was not a simple game. The catcher's the ball's in the dirt. You don't want anything going through you and getting somebody on.
Yeah, you know what? Hector Sanchez has more experience, you know, game calling than you would think. He hasn't played a lot here in the major leagues. I think we may have talked about this a couple of years ago, but here's a guy that plays winter ball, and he rubs elbows with all the major leaguers in the winter. You know, there's a good brand of baseball. And so he's been behind the plate quite a bit, but getting an opportunity to do it at the major league level day after day after day, there's a certain amount of comfort and that comes along with that, opposed to playing, you know, once a week where you don't get in the groove of knowing the other guys. You don't get in the groove of swinging the bat at the plate. So this is a great opportunity for him to show what he can do.
Yeah, that's going to be one of those over-the-winter things. Where does he end up? I mean, you do have an MVP and a batting title guy doing the catching. So that's going to be a little tricky how to figure this out.
Well, catchers are hard to find. I mean, you look out there, and if you, you know, look at free agents and you look at strengthening your catching core, it's not an easy position to fill. We're fortunate. We have Buster Posey and we have Hector Sanchez. And you know, I certainly believe in Hector Sanchez and want to see him become the player we think he can be.
Yeah, I like it. And in September, it's happening. Let's go back to Petit for a second. I was lucky enough to sit down there. Remember, Larry Bear and I, we had this event with a community fund auction winner. And yeah, who knows? You know, you sit down there and all of a sudden I'm looking at my scorecard. You know, for six innings, nothing. You know, it's completely clean, and, you know, you don't want to say anything. You don't want to move around. I'm staying in my seat. I told Larry, sit in your seat. It's okay. And then I look in the dugout, and there's Petit. You know, he's alone. He's wiping his face with a towel. Well, give me a you from your eyes as this thing is unfolding again here. I know you say, here we go again, but this was very exciting.
No question. It, you know, it's probably one of the most exciting things that happened. I mean, we've had a lot of great moments here. Bonds hitting all his home runs, and those are exciting. But, you know, he comes to the plate. It's all on the at-bat. He hits the ball, and it's over. But a perfect game. This thing builds and builds and builds. And, you know, from my perspective, you're on the bench. You really don't think much about it until the sixth inning. You know, he's in the middle of the sixth inning, and all of a sudden you say, you know, it comes to the forefront. This could happen. You know, five innings, four innings. You know what? It's just a game. So he hits the sixth inning. Now he goes out for the seventh. And, you know, the jitters are there for everybody. Everybody is on their toes. Nobody wants to make a mistake. And I'll tell you, you know, I went to Crawford in the ninth inning. I went to him in the seventh inning. And I said, hey, start getting loose so this thing stays like this. I'm sure you're going to go to a short and Joaquin's going to go to third. And he was nervous. He told me, and when he went into ninth, he goes, I'm nervous. I said, you're nervous. He goes, have you ever gone in to play defense in a perfect game in the last inning? And he's right. You know, it's bigger than yourself. You don't want to mess it up. You don't want to make an error. And it's such a team, such a team thing when a guy can accomplish this. And every player on the field is pulling for him, as are the fans, and knows how important this is.
Yeah, you're right. And John pointed out on the and Dave, you know, and Krook and Kipe, they said, look, this is, you can't make a mistake as a teammate.
Right.
You know, it's one thing, you know, you make an error, you can deal with it, but you can't do that.
Exactly.
In a game like this.
And, you know, Crawford's never, he's never nervous about playing defense, but it's bigger than him, you know. Yeah. It's now all of a sudden there's a different element put onto the game.
Well, you got Perez in there, you know, the bench, obviously Bruce, and you guys got Perez in at the right time and got Pill out of there. Well, what went into that decision?
Well, you know, Boach has been doing that with Brett, you know, probably because he had a no-hitter, but we had the lead. It was a close game, and you know, Brett hasn't played a lot of outfield. We got, you know, three or four legitimate outfielders who played that position the whole time. We had the lead, and if you follow, you know, I know you follow the other games, but he's been doing the same thing. Maybe with the no-hitter, he wanted to do it a little bit earlier to give him a shot. But we had the 2-0 lead, and he wanted to preserve that. Was, I think, the biggest thing at that point in time.
How did you like that catch?
Oh, that was fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. No question. It's nice when it works out that way, when you make a move and then all of a sudden, it pays dividends right away.
They say in baseball, the ball finds you.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? I mean, you make a move and the ball finds you. I don't know if you were on with me. I think, did we talk a couple of weeks ago of taking the pitcher and the relief pitcher and putting him on a position and bringing it in? Did I do that with you?
No, not with
me.
Oh,
listen.
Yeah.
No, I did this with someone. You know, the old Paul Richards, a wonderful manager and tactician. You know, he was one of those old school guys. So if he had Billy Pierce, the lefty pitching, it was the eighth inning, and a righty was coming up, he'd put Billy Pierce on third base.
Yeah.
And bring in the relief pitcher, who was a righty, and that'd get the out, and Billy Pierce would then go back to the mound. But the fear was, in baseball, the ball will find you.
Sure.
And you got to find a place to put the pitcher to do it. Do you ever do anything like that in the minor leagues?
No, we haven't. You think about it. You know, I've thought about it on this club. One of your great followers and listeners, he's listening this morning, Javi Lopez,
yes.
is the one guy that – I thought to myself, you know, he'd want to do this. He'd be perfect. The left-hander comes up, stick him in the outfield, because this guy can run the ball down. He's a great athlete. You see him field his position on the mound. But he would be the perfect guy to do that with. If you ran out of left-handed pitchers and, sure. you know, the game was an extra inning game or whatever the case may be, but you could probably get it done. But, you know, you have a 25-man roster today, and guys have all these specialty roles. You don't see those things happen like you did years ago.
Yeah, that would be interesting. There may be a rule against this now that if the pitcher comes out and plays a position, he can't go back for an inning.
I don't believe so.
No?
I'm not aware of any rule like that. So I would think that that would be able to happen. I'll ask an umpire today.
We will ask Eddie Montague.
Yeah, there you go.
Who hopefully is up by now and listening.
You know he's listening.
He's funny. You know, it's funny. You know, in the perfect game, how'd you like the ninth inning? I mean, you know, I thought the last two hitters were going to be trouble. And I realize Parr is a good hitter. And Chavez, we know, is a good hitter. What do you think of those last couple of bats?
Well, the crescendo builds and builds and builds. And, you know, I agreed with you. Parra was a little nerve-wracking. He thought that, you know, lefty on righty there, and the way he swings the bat, he has speed. He could chop one. Anything can happen. And he got through him. And then Chavez came up there. We know he's a good hitter. But, you know, it's not easy to pinch hit. And you know, it came down to a 3-2 count. And I think the biggest difference, you know, I haven't been in that situation, but to be a pitcher in that spot, you know, if he was in hindsight, it would have been nice if he walked the guy, maybe, because
yes.
now he could have went for the no hitter. You get to a 3-2 count in a no hitter, and you can maybe, you know, throw one up and in. You can throw one down off the plate. You can make a pitch that doesn't have to be a strike and see if he'll chase, and you still have the no hitter intact. But I guarantee you that thought does not cross Petit's mind when you have a perfect game. You don't say, well, I want to know. You want the perfect game, so you're going to have to throw something on the plate and take your chances. And he was dotting that outside corner all day long, and he went back to it, got a little bit of the plate, and, you know, tip your cap to Chavez. He's a professional hitter, and he got the base hit. And it ruined everybody's night.
Didn't it?
Yes.
Didn't it? I want to tell you, even yesterday, I felt badly. I must tell you, it was like we said in Brooklyn, we was robbed.
Yeah.
I tell you, I wanted to leave Friday night with that. It was going to be one of these gifts of the sea. We needed it for the season. And I really wanted it. You know, yeah, I'm a professional. I'm a reporter. You know, I like it. But there was, in a baseball moment, I wanted that baseball moment.
Yeah. Well, everybody was disappointed. I mean, we were, you know, after the game, I don't know how many times, darn, I can't believe, you know, come on, you can't get any closer than that. So there's disappointment, but, you know, as YP said, I mean, what a tremendous effort. He had a complete game shutout. And good for him. I mean, he'll remember that game the rest of his life.
Yeah, I thought Phil Cuzzi called a pretty good game.
Yeah, he did. He did a
We've
nice job.
We've had issues with him in the past, but...
Yeah, well, you know, I guess you umpire have. Enough games, you're going to have issues on calls here and there. And I think the one you referred to is a home plate.
Right, against the
Ishikawa.
Mets.
Yeah, against the Mets. And but, you know, that happens. That's part of the game.
Yeah. So he has a nickname now, YP. Is that a nickname?
Well,
official?
I don't think it's official. If you listen to people talk, you know, nobody mentions his first name. It's always Petit, because I don't think anybody can pronounce it. So I think, you know, opposed to calling him Yosemite, which isn't close to his name, YP is the way to go.
All right. This is good. I didn't know that. Ron Wotus with us on Sunday morning. Let's take a quick break. And we'll come back. I want to talk a little bit about the relay from last night, and also the throw to first by Pagan. Man, that was something else. And a little bit of Petit, a little more of Petit. And I'll throw this out, Ronnie. You can think of it as we go to the break. If a hitter came up at 28 and all of a sudden had to hit 320 and 5 home runs in the month of September, yeah, you say he's 28, you know, he's a little bit old. But if a pitcher comes up at 28 and all of a sudden opens everybody's eyes, and you can watch how he maneuvers, throws 120 pitches each game, it looks different. Pitchers have a way of making it when they get older. I want to get your opinion on that. All right, more coming up right here on The Sports Leader.
Talking baseball with Marty Lurie on KNBR 680, The Sports Leader. KNBR KNBR's Giants pregame continues. You're talking baseball with Marty Lurie on The Sports Leader.
And my co-host, the bench coach of the San Francisco Giants, Ron Wotus. Always appreciate this Sunday morning. What I was bringing up at the break, Petit is someone, you know, 28 years old. He's a pitcher at 28. Sort of opens some eyes as opposed to a hitter. And Gabby, that's enough music. We've heard it. Thank you. That's enough. All right. Thank you so much. All right. You're waking me up here on Sunday. All right. But a pitcher's a little different, right, at 28 than a hitter?
Well, I think, you know, pitchers do mature a little bit later. And, you know, once a pitcher does it, I think it's easier for him to repeat it because he's in control and command of his stuff.
Okay.
You know, say he learns how to pitch or his location gets better or he learns how to change speeds. You know, that's something that he has, and he controls the at bat.
Okay.
Hitting wise, I mean, you know, guys typically all of a sudden, you know, don't struggle to hit, and then at 28 become, you know, great hitters, whether it was their mechanics or their mind didn't allow them to have a good mental approach and know how to hit in situations or what the pitcher's going to do, typically just don't come on and all of a sudden hit great. If they do, you may say, well, he had a good month,
yeah.
You know, and everybody can have a good month in this game or a good couple months. They're talented guys, but to do it over the long haul is really a testament. You know, can they make adjustments? Do they think properly? And I agree with you, a pitcher that finds it, he controls the at-bat. It's his stuff. Hopefully he can carry that forward.
Got it. So what do you think of Petit now? I mean, obviously the game the other night was terrific. He's shown he could beat the West, which
right.
is nice. You know, I remember Zito years ago when he was with the A's, his record against the American League West was just fabulous, as I like to say.
Right.
But this guy, he'll probably pitch against Colorado next
yeah.
week. And if you stay in rotation, he gets the Mets and the Yankees on the back end of that road trip.
Right.
So what do you think of him?
Well, you know what? Keep running him out there. You know, he's going to be a guy. Look, he's been in the major leagues with a few clubs. He's had his moments of success. He goes down to AAA. He always pitches very well down there. He's a guy, if he gets an opportunity, he has to take advantage of it. And that's just what he's doing. So what do? You keep running him out there until he proves he can't do the job because he has the experience. He has the know-how. And, you know, he obviously... He pitched a tremendous game. He's pitched very good for us since he's been here. So he's getting better, just as you're saying. His stuff may not be any different, but he's commanding it, and he's probably changing speeds a little bit better, more confident. Who knows what it is? But you keep giving him an opportunity and let the league prove that he can't do it.
Yeah, the hitters will tell you, as
yeah.
we like to say. 28 years old, like I say. See, 28 for me as a pitcher is okay.
Sure.
That's why I like seeing it, because
yeah.
you become a lot smarter.
Yeah.
At 28. All right, the Pagan yesterday, boy, a throw that he made to Crawford, and Crawford threw a laser to the plate, and Sanchez a great tag on the other end of it. But it reminded me of Willie Mays. If you look at the catch against Cleveland 1954, Willie makes the catch and whirls around with the throw, and you see the hat is off, and he's looking forward. Pagan did the whirl around. He did a 360 and got the ball to Crawford. And Crawford threw the laser. You must have enjoyed that.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm going to enjoy telling Angel that he was just compared to Willie Mays today when I see him out on the field. He'll appreciate that. You know, great job all the way around. As you mentioned, Sanchez to complete the play. And the throw had to be perfect. And Crawford showed his strong arm
yeah.
and got the ball right there on the money. Sanchez, nice tag. And it always makes you smile when you execute like that. And that's the way it's supposed to be done.
How about Pagan throwing, Pollock? I think Pollock out at first, who, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what happened? There was a decoy, right?
Yeah.
This is the inside of baseball. All right, Professor, here we go.
Oh.
It's time to go to school with Ron Wotus because they decoyed this runner. And
yeah.
and Pagan didn't realize it right away. And all of a sudden, the light came on. He says, I got a shot here.
Right, right.
So what happened?
Well, you know, as a middle infielder, you're always looking forward to that. I mean, the ball's hit, runner's on first. And if the runner doesn't peek and know where the ball is, you play it out as if it's going to be a double play. You want the guy to slide. You know the ball's in the air, so you're you're hoping that you can fool them into thinking the ball's on the ground. And Crawford and Scudero did that. They played it out like it was a double play. And it gives the outfielder, you know, the guy slides, gives the outfielder a chance to get the ball back in. So they pulled it off perfectly. And, you know, I know they were smiling about it when they come in the dugout because, you know, you don't get many guys on the decoy. But when you do, it's definitely worth it. And you have nothing else to do in that situation, you know, as an infielder, is try to create some doubt in a runner so maybe you can double them up.
You do that in spring training? Is that a drill?
No, I've never done it as a drill. You know, it's one of those things you just learn, you know, playing the game. It's probably talked about early on in your career, but no, we don't necessarily do it as a drill. The only time I could say we come close to doing something like that as a drill was years ago. We used to take phantom infields in the minor leagues. We had our manager, Tommy Sant. He loved the phantom infield. And, you know, you get to get out there and be goofy, and the guy hits the guys would be diving. You know, it's a fake ball if people don't know.
Explain what it is.
Well, instead of having a real ball, the coach would go out there to third base, everybody would be in the infield, and he'd fake throwing it up and hitting it. And the player does the same. He pretends, you know, like you're, you know, a 6-year-old, 7-year-old kid, that the ball's hit to you. You throw it across the diamond. First baseman has to catch. Everybody plays it, you know, as if it was a real ball. And you see guys diving to their left, jumping up. You see all kinds of crazy stuff. But, you know, we had fun with that.
Well, what's the point of it? Is there an actual benefit to it?
I never figured that out. I think it's just to have a little fun, you know, have a little fun and do something different, you know, break up the monotony.
Yeah, well, at the end of the Negro Leagues, it was a very popular part of doing that in the infield. Hank Aaron did it with the Indianapolis
Clowns. Really, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was very popular. They would do that and throw it around like that. Very popular for the fans. I always wondered, because I see someone like Affeldt down in the bullpen, he's always throwing with a towel.
Right.
And I'm saying to myself, all right, what is the purpose of that?
Right, right. Well, that's a particular drill. You know, they're working on, you know, their balance and their delivery, and, you know, the towel is supposed to come through a particular way to keep everything in line. But, no, that's an actual drill where they're really working on something opposed to a fan in infield. Yeah.
Why don't you do that? Come on. Couldn't we do a phantom if by the end of the year?
Well, I don't think it would go over too good.
I think it would.
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, we'll give it some thought. How
all
about
right.
That money?
Yeah. At least, as I like to say as a lawyer, would you at least consider it?
Sure, we'll consider it.
Consider that he may be innocent, please. Just consider it. All right. The throws of this series have been pretty good. Now, how about Parra? And I know, you know, Francoeur had a great arm, and there's some people in baseball we've always remembered with the great arms. This guy, did he come out of nowhere? Has this always been Parra?
No, he's always had an outstanding arm, but, you know, he just seems to be getting better. His arm strength was always there, but what's really uncanny watching him play is his accuracy.
Okay.
I mean, in that one game against us, he made several throws. It's one thing to be able to come in on a ball with momentum and make a great throw when you have some momentum going forward. But, you know, on the Sandoval play, Flant, you know, had the right call. I mean, this guy caught the ball flat-footed. He was deep, and he still uncorked a tremendous throw. And, you know, he changes the game. He's a guy like Mondesi and Vladimir Guerrero and Roberto Clemente and Jesse Barfield. These guys changed the game. And I know as a third base coach, you lose sleep over guys like that because, you know, plays that are just average play, base hit to right, balls hit slower, a deep fly ball. You can't send people, and he's so far above and beyond the other outfielders. You have to remember who's out there, and you just can't run like you normally would.
Yeah, especially, you know, you like to see outfielders going in different directions weight wise, and, you know, so they don't have momentum or, you know, they have to spin around. But this guy, I don't care where he gets the ball, he seems to be able to straighten it up and get rid of it. And that's the strange thing.
Yeah, and in the air. He's not one hopping. He's throwing strikes in the air every time. Yeah, nice. Tremendous arm.
Boy, yesterday on the show, a couple of things. We had fun yesterday. We did the Marty Lurie Bingo. yesterday. And I want you to, you know, consider it. You know, just see if you can work in some of these things into the answers. But we had a great crowd at the public house. It was fun.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at your board here, and Parra, he can play, is one of your quotes right there. And, you know, the Phantom Infield, Marty, oh, come on. I think I got to drop a come on that. I don't know if that's going to happen. But, you know, let's take a look at these September call-ups, and let's see what they can do on a major league field.
That was a big winner yesterday.
Was it?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Dahlia of Dahlia's Desserts.
It sounds like a great time yesterday to raise money for a good cause.
It was fun. It really was. And later on in the show, Richard Rossi was on, and he has done the Clemente movie. And we talked on the show a couple of weeks ago about what should be the next great baseball movie. You know, 42 came out with Jackie Robinson, and most people, I'd say the overwhelming choice was Clemente. And someone then put me in touch with Richard Rossi, and he's got this movie coming out in December. You're a former Pittsburgh Pirate. Clemente must have meant something to you.
Well, he meant a lot to the organization. I mean, great choice for a movie, because coming up with the Pirates, you know, that's who you heard about all the time was Roberto Clemente. Their spring training's in Bradenton, Florida. And they have a room designated. They used to have their own hotel on site. There's four fields. There's a hotel on site that players coming into spring training, all the minor leaguers, will stay at. And, you know, they have a room there that's the Roberto Clemente room, and of course all his, statues,
really?
And pictures of Roberto everywhere. I mean, he was the Pirate organization, and it's a great story, and I think people really enjoy the movie.
Yeah, McKechnie Field.
Yeah, yeah.
Bill McKechnie.
Yeah.
The nickname was the Deacon.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
That Deacon, yeah, he was a great manager, but very, you know, serious, pious kind of man. And he was called the Deacon, Bill McKechnie, and it's McKechnie Field.
It's McKechnie Field, and that's where the Major League Club plays.
That's
and
right.
that's a few miles away from Pirate City, they call it. You know, the minor league complex is about 3 miles away from the Major League Park. And back when I was there, we would train at the minor league complex for the first couple weeks until games start. Then you would move over to McKechnie Field because, a little bit like Scottsdale, there wasn't a lot of fields there. We just had the one field. So you have four fields at the minor league complex. You do all your work till game starts, then you'd move into McKechnie Field.
And they still train in Bradenton.
Yeah, they do.
They have been in Bradenton. God, I would think back to the 50s, maybe?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure of the date, but yeah, same facility. I hear McKechnie is a beautiful place now. They redone it, obviously. They tore it down and rebuilt it, and they say it's a beautiful ballpark.
I was in Bradenton to visit Mike Quadi, who's on the card. You know, I dropped the Mike Quadi, and that's on the card somewhere. And I got to meet, remember Tony Bartiromo?
Absolutely. He was my trainer in the major leagues.
He was a first baseman for the Pirates, a great minor league first baseman, and he became the trainer.
Yeah, yeah. I think he went from a first baseman to driving the bus.
Really?
To being the athletic trainer with no credentials to be one, you know. And I don't know what your major league baseball put the rule in that you actually had to have some certification to treat major league players. But as a young player, I mean, this is the way it used to be. Tony was a trainer. You walk in there as a young player, and he wouldn't give you the time of day. He'd either tell you to get out of there, or if you had something wrong with you, it was hurt, he'd tape an aspirin to your arm or your leg or whatever it was, and say, you know, take a hike, kid. He said, get out of here. And that was it. You know, that's the way it was.
First baseman, the old Hollywood Stars. I'm sure that people remember Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yeah.
That was funny. Yeah.
Tony Barnum, I'm sure.
Very funny. Hey, all right. Well, good for you. You know, you got another game against Arizona. This is the end of Arizona, thank goodness.
Yeah.
This is game 19 against them. They're a pretty good ball club.
Yeah.
And I was thinking last night, Giants, Arizona, Giants, Dodgers. This division, you've got a challenge in this division. You got to keep up with people.
Yeah. I mean, it's... You know, you have to play well in your own division. Is that on the card here, Marty?
No.
Because it should be.
I've said that a lot.
Yes, you have.
Give me another one.
Well, what do we have here? Let's let the kids play. How about that? Just let the kids play.
I was right about that one.
Yeah. Well, that's a fabulous thing to say. But you have to play good in your division. There's no question about that. And, you know, we have fared well in our division. I think if you look at our stats and record this year, it's been outside the division that we've had problem. We know our division very well, and hopefully we can continue to play well because we want to finish strong here, and we are playing within the division.
Yeah.
So,
and you're not, I don't want to jinx it. We don't believe in jinxes, but you know, you're playing pretty good defense now.
Yeah, the guys are playing good defense. You know, there's been great energy. Look, we're out of this thing right now, and the one thing that I'm pleased with personally is the guys are still working and they're playing with energy out there, and they played well defensively this last week.
Yeah, bullpen 40 innings, 3 runs given up. Bullpen's
absolutely
doing a good job.
Yeah,
all right,
yeah.
All right, good to see you. Have a good day today, and it's been fabulous having you on the show.
Okay, Marty, always a pleasure. Thanks.
All right, that is Ron Wotus, the bench coach. You win something for saying all those things. Get him a bobblehead, Kyle, would you please? All right. The Marty Lurie bobblehead will be next year, so don't worry. I'm only kidding.
Okay.
All right. More coming up right now on the Sports Leader.